Support for this public radio podcast comes from the Society for Human Resource Management, which also sponsors PBS's CEO Exchange, online at shrm.org.
Get out the shovels.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Wall Street has started the year digging quite a hole. The Dow has lost more than 1,000 points already, 300 just yesterday. But today, investors should be in a better mood. IBM and GE both had good things to say about their profits. And President Bush will give a speech today about stimulating the economy. Right now, it looks like there could be some kind of taxpayer rebate, maybe up to $800 a person. The idea is to get people spending money fast. And so far, the Dow is up 117 points in early trading to 12,276. The NASDAQ has added 18, and the S&P 500 has tacked on 10 points. In Asia today, stocks finished with a kick, a 0.5% gain. European shares are up about 1% so far. Today, the Commerce Department comes out with a report on one of the most elusive economic engines we have. More now from Danielle Carson.
Innovation is a critical driver of economic growth, and yet the government hasn't updated how to quantify its economic impact since the Great Depression.
Today, we know that the economy is based on human capital and innovation, and we can't measure either one of those very well with existing statistics.
Carl Schramm, CEO of the Kauffman Foundation, helped craft recommendations for measuring innovation, for example.
There are a number of patents filed every year. We have to know more about those patents. We have to know what the data is that comes out of the IRS about firm formation.
Business leaders don't really know who leads the pack, the U.S., China, or Japan. Still, they say innovation has boosted America's GDP by 70% in the last two decades. In Washington, I'm Danielle Carson for Marketplace.
We seem to be in the middle of a baby boomlet. The numbers we just got, the U.S. fertility rate increased 2% between 2005 and 2006. Nancy Marshall-Genzer looks at the economic impact.
Most industrialized nations have low birth rates and aging populations, not us. In 2006, birth rates were high enough to stabilize the population for the first time since 1971. Nan Maria Stone of Johns Hopkins School of Public Health says the baby boomlet is just big enough to replace aging workers.
You want to have a reservoir of good workers to fill those jobs and grow our economy.
Florida State University economist Frank Hyland says that reservoir generates taxes to keep Social Security afloat.
We will be talking less about severe cuts to Social Security benefits or severe increases in the normal retirement age than we currently are.
Hyland cautions the higher birth rate might not last. We had a temporary population blip in the late 80s. After that, it was bye-bye baby until the 2006 boomlet. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Listening to the Morning Report for Friday, January 18th on Marketplace.org. Fidel Castro hasn't been seen in public in about 18 months. His brother Raul has been running the country. And Raul did something no one expected. He started a conversation about what ails the Cuban economy. This Sunday, Cuba holds parliamentary elections. We wanted to see if anything has changed since Raul took over. Dan Gretsch reports from our America's desk at WLRN.
Regardless of ideology, economists agree Fidel Castro has left Cuba's economy in tatters. When you adjust for inflation, per capita income in Cuba in 1953 was $2,000. Today, it's under $200. Economist Antonio Jorges with Florida International University.
Fidel Castro is a political animal, not an economic animal. He doesn't care about economics that he would consider to be bourgeois weaknesses.
Jorge says Fidel's brother Raul is different. Since taking over, Raul has initiated reforms in agriculture and transportation and has legalized hard currency payments to Cubans working in joint ventures. Brian Littell at the University of Miami says Raul would like to see the economy open even more.
Raul is constrained because he and Fidel, in my view, are in sharp disagreement, profound disagreement about what needs to be happening in Cuba.
Littell says Raul has made the political calculation that he must reform the economy.
Raul recognizes, I believe, that he's got to make the system work better because he can't rule with the same confidence, with the same charisma, with the same legitimacy that his brother has for all these decades. Raul is going to have to give the people bread.
Other Cuba analysts disagree that Fidel and Raul are split over economic policy. Kirby Jones runs the U.S.-Cuba Trade Association. He says since 1995, Fidel helped launch 235 joint ventures and opened the island to investment from around the world. Now Raul has begun a national dialogue on Cuba's economic ills.
What developed under Raul was essentially a national suggestion box. He opened up the dialogue in the factories, in schools, in hospitals. Every person had the chance to make their complaints known.
But experts say this suggestion box may have opened a Pandora's box. Raul has raised people's expectations dangerously high, and he may not be able to deliver the major reforms economists say the island needs. In Miami, I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
All week, the car industry has been admiring itself in Detroit. But tomorrow, the International Auto Show opens to the public. This year's theme has to be green. Hybrids, plug-ins, cars made from plastic bottles, even a fuel-efficient Ferrari. Plus, the one car that's not at the show, a $2,500 a car from India, is getting a lot of hype. Let's bring in David Welch. He covers the auto industry for Business Week magazine. David, let's start with fuel efficiency. Is this all about the new government fuel standards or just good business?
It's both, and here's why. You know, with gasoline selling in most markets in the U.S. at $3 a gallon and above, all the companies realize that, you know, CAFE increase or no CAFE increase, the market is changing. You're going to lose buyers if you're the one who is late to the party. And then, of course, long term, they have to downsize. V8s will become V6s. Six-cylinders will become four-cylinders because they simply have to meet the regulations for the law.
Now, if we're talking about downsizing, we have to talk about the car everyone's been talking about all week, the car that's not even there at the auto show, the Tata Nano. What do you think of this thing?
There are a lot of really interesting things about this car. One is the $2,500 car can't be sold in Western markets. It simply will not meet U.S. or Western European safety and emissions regulations. But could a company like Tata, which has very cheap engineering and labor costs, you know, could they make a $5,000 or $6,000 car and sell it in the States? Sure. The other question is, will Americans want a car like that? Even a $5,000 or $6,000 Tata that meets U.S. regulations, you're talking about something that is very, very basic transportation. The Nano has, I think, a speedometer, a fuel gauge, and a check oil light, and that's about it.
Does it have doors?
forget about plugging your iPod in. You may have to have the headphones of your iPod on while driving this car. You know, we're a technology society now. We love our gadgets. You know, we like satellite radio and navigation systems. So if that's what people want, you know, rather than basic transportation, I think they could sell the car here. They certainly could. I don't think it would be in huge numbers.
So we're probably not going to see people driving a Nano while listening to their Nano anytime soon.
that's a good way to put it.
One more question. The auto show will open to the public tomorrow. If somebody's going to go, what do you think they should try to see?
You know, it's not a show that has kind of a lot of big dream cars. But if that's the sort of thing you're into, you know, I would check out the Lexus LFA Roadster. It's a concept car, but it's sort of Lexus's answer to a Ferrari. It is a really gorgeous car. I would look at GM. They've got a Cadillac CTS Coupe. It's a two-door that is simply stunning. And one of my favorite picks of the show is the BMW 1 Series convertible. The car not only looks great, to me is sort of where part of the luxury market is going.
Mm-hmm.
Even Americans now are going to have to decouple the words luxury and large.
All right, David Welch of Business Week magazine, thanks for joining us.
Sure, thanks for having me on the show.
In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for tuning in, and have a great weekend.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.